everybody. Welcome to a very special edition of the Unscripted Wrestling Podcast here on the Everything Unscripted Podcast Network. I am your host tonight, Doug Hummer, and I am joined by a very esteemed panel, my brother Daniel.
What's up?
All right, Eric's here.
Hey.
All right, Clinith is with us.
How you doing?
All right, Stevie's here.
Hey.
All right, we have Kenny back with us.
Hello.
And a very special guest, mine and Daniel's friend Brandon is here.
Hey, what's going on, fellas?
All right, so this is a very special edition of the podcast. We are paying tribute to John Huber, better known to wrestling fans as Luke Harper in the WWE, Brody Lee, everywhere else, who passed away this past Saturday at the age of 41, the day after Christmas. So we're going to do a special tribute episode to him. Brandon, I'm going to start with you because you probably knew him better than any of us because you worked with him.
I did. It was a lot of fun working with that guy. Learned a lot from him. You know, I mean, on TV, he's perceived as this, vindictive asshole. But behind the scenes, that man is just such a sweetheart. You know, he helped me out any chance he could. He would occasionally stop into the school I was training at, show me, give me some pointers. I remember the first big boot I took from him. Oh my God, I ate that right on the cheek. It was great. Oh man, and I go, thank you. And he's like, you're welcome. Let's run it back. I'm like, oh crap, there's another one. I was like, no, he's gonna do it again. But that man is huge. Oh man, I was looking up to him, but he was such a sweetheart. I'm trying to think of another story I could tell. So my first wrestling show. All right, so I'm coming out. I've got everyone kind of had me dressed up as like this kind of like Michael Kelso, that 70s show gimmick. So I'm already like goofy as is, but I come out, I'm wearing this singlet. I got knee pads and kick pads and wrestling shoes. And I thought of the great idea of putting pants on over that. And I was wearing this stupid goofy freaking fedora with a feather coming out. It was just not good. Just not a good sight to see. So it was like a battle royal over the top type of match, and I was one of the two superstars that would be starting off the match. And I get in there and I try to take the pants off, and it was a no-go. It got stuck in the ankles, and I'm like, oh fuck. After a while, like, the other superstar that I was working with was like looking at me like, oh fuck, oh no, he's really trying to take his pants off. And I'm like sitting down in the corner, oh fuck, 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 fuck. And then eventually the crowd started to boo, and they were like, oh, I hope it doesn't happen in the bedroom. I'm like, oh crap. So finally the professional that the other superstar was, he comes over and starts beating up on me and like literally dragging me around the ring to try, get my pants off. So finally, when he gets my pants off, I get up and I'm like, yeah, and all the crew was like, yeah. I turn around, there's Brody. I'm like, no. gives me a big boot, throws me over the rope. It was like a classic. I get up, I'm celebrating, and everyone's just like kind of pointing, hey, there's someone behind me, isn't there? And I felt that beard tickle in the back of my head. I'm like, and I'm slowly turning around. I'm like, hey, buddy. Gives out like that distinct grin of his and just throws me over like I was nothing. Throws me like a kite. did not really have to jump for him at all because he was a strong guy. Strong guy. But I remember after that, after the wrestling show, because we were in Rochester, we went to this bar. I think it was called the German House. And we were all sitting there drinking, you know, and, you know, getting to know each other a little bit. And he pulled, you know, me and my buddy over at the time over. And we were just, you know, discussing just random shit. You know, like he asked me how I got into wrestling and, you know, how long of a fan I've been. And he was at the same time, you know, he was telling me pointers and what I need to do. And he was like really supportive. And, you know, he's like, next time probably shouldn't lead with the pants. I go, yo, you watch that, huh? I go, oh, yeah. I was like, oh, boy. So, and then it was just a lot of fun. And it's got me, like, really, like, thinking about it again. And especially now after he passed and after I heard that a lot of superstars are going to, like, donate their money to the family. So I'm definitely going to be getting, like, a Brody Lee merchandise of some sort, you know, a T-shirt, because I just feel bad for him. He's got two kids at home, you know, and it's his wife, and it's just – it's awful. The day after Christmas out of all the days. But, yeah, what I can say is he was a great guy, great teacher, and a very well-known professional around the world. Like, he was well-known before he even hit WWE. You know, so everybody that came into contact with this guy loved him instantly, and I can understand why. He was a great human being. He will be missed.
And what's funny is that, like, all these tributes that have come in for him, you know, he had Bray Wyatt obviously write a letter for him, or a letter to him, or however it goes. Eric Rowan,
yeah,
goes by Eric Redbeard now, wrote something for him.
Yep.
Even Randy Orton, who is basically, it's well known, Randy Orton doesn't like a lot of people. Okay.
Yeah, I can see that.
But, you know, he said something, because Randy Orton and Luke Harper actually had really good chemistry in the ring, too. They've had really good matches with one another.
What a lot of people know
is, you know, Brody was born in Rochester, New York, which is not that far from where myself, Daniel, Kenny, Brandon, and Stevie all grew up. Now, out of all of us, Brandon's the only one that knew him. But the first time I saw him, Kenny, I don't know if it's the first time you saw him or not, but you were with me back in 2007 at the last Ballpark Brawl that they did. Or it was called Ballpark Brawl, right?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Oh,
that was,
yeah,
2007. And if I remember correct, that was the first time I had ever seen him. And he was going, he went by Big Rig Brody Lee, right?
Yeah, from what I remember.
Yeah.
Yep, that sounds right.
Do you remember that that night at all?
Yeah, I don't remember him, to be honest. I really don't. But yeah, I don't remember Brody Lee being there, but he was there.
Yeah. From what I remember, he teamed with Big Cat Lemmer, I think it was, in a tables thing, and then he actually turned on Lemmer at the end of the match.
I'll go with you what you're saying, man, yeah.
I mean, I know your fondest memories of a Ballpark Brawl are when Matt Morgan and Monty Brown got too close to us, and then you ran like hell and left me to die.
Well, hey, I had a little kid to protect. Don't forget that part. There was a little kid with us.
Jerk.
Yeah, but no. Brody Lee was mad. I never met him. My trainer knew him very well. They were friends. But, wow, just like, yeah. So take it back, Doug, before I say anything else.
Yeah, he, and here's the thing, for anybody that doesn't know, he died from a non-COVID-related lung issue. Now, what they, I don't know if that meant lung cancer or what happened, but it's something that he had been dealing with. Well, AEW knew about it as early as November, but I think he's been dealing with it since October, since he lost the TNT title to Cody.
Yep.
I don't know
his family
details. I don't know the specific details, but I do know that he had been dealing with it. He was at Mayo Clinic. But AEW was very silent on it because his wife asked them to be.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's correct.
Yeah. Now, I don't know. Now, Brandon, were you? Did you know his wife at all?
I only met her one time, so I don't really know her. But she, from what when I did meet her, she was a very nice lady. You know, I could see why Brody would be with her because she's a very, you know, very like warm, you know, loving human being. It was just very supportive with whatever he did, and just the short conversation that I had with her, I just got that vibe with her that she's a really cool person, and I would have loved to conversate with her more, you know, but it is what it is, you know. But yeah, she's
go ahead, Brandon.
From what I heard, it was like a undisclosed like lung issue that he was hospitalized, I think, October, like not too long after he was taken off TV. And, you know, she didn't want to like disclose much, obviously, you know, privacy thing, but it, who knows? I mean, lung thing could mean, you know, lung cancer, pneumonia, you know, who knows? But they said it was non-COVID related, and I believe them. So, I mean, they know. Why would they lie about something like that? So,
well, she wouldn't.
Exactly.
He would. What did she have to gain out of it?
Nothing.
Now, for anybody, and again, none of us are doctors. I mean, Kenny's related to a couple of nurses, but none of us are doctors. But, like,
no.
Basically, like, as far as the lungs go, obviously you need the lungs to breathe. If there's something wrong with you, you can't really breathe.
Okay? All right, thanks there, Professor Science. Like, no, who is telling you? What the hell? No shit, Doug.
I'm just explaining to the listeners, okay?
I...
So,
fucking Dougie Hauser over here.
It was a serious issue.
Oh,
the guy
that was a good joke.
Right. The serious issue, the guy couldn't breathe, so obviously they had to take him off TV.
Yeah.
All right. Now, I think one of the things that they said, like, because it was actually reported that he was dealing with an ankle injury. But I think that was basically just kind of to, you know, so people quit asking questions. I mean, I don't remember. I remember reading that somebody said he was dealing with an ankle injury.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I don't know about that, but I'll just say, you know, the first time I really remember seeing the guy was when I first got to watch a lot of him. He was on Pro Wrestling Ohio as, like, basically like a – he was doing the big rig thing, but he was like a hired hitman, basically, kind of coming in. Working for the lead bad guy, and like I'm just like, first of all, look at the guy, he's gigantic, right? And then you got the beard, so he looks even more gigantic. And like I'm like, oh yeah, this guy's got something. And how big he, what he did in the ring, how fast he could move, and how like hard he, at least, you know, how hard it made it look like he was hitting guys, and it just was such a good package. And like to finally see him come to the, you know, to the big time was great because they gave him. I think both companies could have done more with him, definitely. But, like, just putting him with with Bray Wyatt was brilliant because, like, he's one of these wrestlers who doesn't need to. He can talk and he should talk. He's an intelligent guy, but, like, he didn't need to. He just needed to stand there and look like psychotic and just, like, do the thing with his face and smile and kind of, like, yeah. You know, like, in a way, like Dr. Tom Pritchard in a different way, but because, you know, Dr. Tom, all he had to do was stand there and flip his hair around. He could cut a promo, but he didn't need to. And Brody was kind of the same way. You got more out of him from just standing there, like, with those eyes, like, boring into you. And it was perfect gimmick. I mean, you know, I mean, it worked. And then he put him with, you know, those guys, and it worked. It just worked. He looked, he gave him a pants and shitty shirt and like, here, go out there and be a, like a backwoods cultist and go for it. And then I think they really, I don't think the gimmick got over the way they wanted it to when he was Mr. Brody Lee or whatever, but like at least he took the shit seriously and like it felt like he meant what he was saying. So I mean, what else could you ask for, especially in that company?
Yeah, he took his crap.
The thing about the Mr. Brody Lee thing is that the Dark Order was basically, well, in my opinion, Dark Order was dead in the water.
That's an understatement.
Okay. It wasn't working. All right. I didn't like the vignette they were doing. As a matter of fact, every time they would air the vignette, I would turn the show off. Because a lot of that stuff just bothered me. But Brody somehow was able, in my opinion, and Eric Dangle and I have talked about this before.
Yeah.
He somehow was able to make it work. Now, he took a lot of no-name guys. Like, nobody gave a shit about John Silver.
Yeah. And apparently he was really pushing for him behind the scenes, too. And like he bought him like a nice jacket and stuff to wear to the ring because it would like help him stand out. Apparently he was like really behind.
Oh my god! Like I don't want this to turn into a critique of the supposed wrestling organization, but the fact that like holy shit! Like anyway, sorry.
I mean he was turning guys that you know really. Again, they were nobodies. They were doing jobs. Of John Silver and Alex Reynolds, especially. And, you know, now John Silver, very entertaining guy. I mean, he runs around like he just got done snorting cocaine.
Yeah.
Well, believe me, he wasn't, because if he couldn't buy himself a jacket, he sure could afford no coke.
Stevie, I'm going to bring you in here. What was your first, when was the first time you actually got to see Brody Lee? Or Luke Harper, whatever he was going by?
I've been watching WWE a lot, so I think it's probably one of his matches in WWE on television. I mean, I didn't go to a live event or anything, so it was just basically TV.
Okay. Clintus, was your first exposure to Brody when he was in the Wyatt family?
Yes, he was. Yes, I was. The Wyatt family, I think it was just more of a standout character when I first saw. More like a good sidekick to Bray Wyatt in a way.
Yeah, and he did kind of branch out on his own. I mean, and him and Rowan as a team before they became the Bludgeon Brothers.
Well, even then, I mean, it was silly, but still, it was something at least. Like, you bought him. You bought him as ass kickers. Like, you didn't. Nobody was going to doubt, like, okay, these are some big motherfuckers, man. He's going to try to make a damn good attempt of beating someone up.
Well, I thought it was badass. Bludgeon Brothers.
Yeah, I mean, no, I like. Well, I like him as part of the Wyatt family.
Of course.
Yeah, well, I mean, yeah.
Yeah.
Now, Kenny, I know that, like, you and I both remember, at least I think we do. Brandon, you might remember this too. I don't know, but when he was part of Ring of Honor and he was part of Jimmy Jacobs' Age of the Fall.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, I remember.
Wow.
You know,
that was a while.
Well, that, I was just thinking of another Ring of Honor memory, and this is, although this is extremely goofy, this is a great, like, it's a great way to understand how big he was. When he and Grizzly Redwood were teaming, now, for those who don't know Grizzly Redwood, imagine a really ripped and cut lumberjack who's only, like, 5'3".
Wow.
like, Grizzly Redwood was, like, he was... He had good size for a guy his size, but he's still 5'3". And, you know, I'm no tall guy, but, like, I would tower over him. Like,
wow.
You know. But, so their finishing move was a, try to imagine this. Grizzly would put the guy up, like, on his shoulders, like a doomsday device. And then Brody Lee would hit the boot on him off the ground.
Oh, Jesus.
Yeah, right? Like, think about it. That's how small this guy was.
Oh, man. No, I got a question for you guys. Sure. Especially the guys, I guess, who knew Brody Lee in ring. How do you, when I watch Brody Lee, I think of a guy that size and how agile he was, like a high fly. Did he actually do that in like real? Real life, when you guys were actually training or wrestling one on one.
Did he what? I'm sorry?
Like high fly, these high flying moves like he does in the ring. Now you see him fly over the top ropes. Like like a light heavyweight. Was he also like that in the ring when he was training you or not? Or give you any pointers about it? Because I like big guys that can like fly like light heavyweights. And I always find that amazing in my eyes to do.
Oh, yeah. You know, it kind of reminded me of The Undertaker a little bit because you couldn't imagine a guy with like a 6'10", 300-pound frame jumping over the rope like he was Rey Mysterio. You know, it was crazy. But as far as like the training aspect, I mean, he didn't do too much of the, you know, the high-flying stuff because he kind of saved that for the shows. But... I was always amazed to see Brody the way he would pull that off because, like you said, a guy in that frame, you know, you just see this guy come out in just blue jeans and a beat up wife beater, and you expect, oh, this guy's just gonna, you know, shove him down, choke slam him a couple times. No, he's jumping over the ropes. The man has always had very good in-ring psychology. He just knew how to draw you in, make you feel how the way he wants you to make you feel, and he always had a surprise in his pocket for anything. And, as far as the high-flying stuff, I didn't really experience it too much when it came to the training aspect, but watching backstage – him doing it in a live show, it was fucking phenomenal. And it always caught me off guard. After seeing it 5 times, I still was like amazed. I'm like, that he's so big. How does he do that?
Right.
Yeah. You know, one thing that I thought he did better than just about anybody and regardless of size was his, He gave the appearance of momentum and speed. Like, you look at the discus clothesline he was doing and the big boot. Gave a sense of movement and force that just even the best guys don't really do. He just made it look like it because, I guess, in a way, there was, a tremendous amount of movement mass going on, but it just looked so much momentum, which is not something you can just is easy to do, would not actually end up hurting people, which never heard a bad thing about it.
You would think the discus clothesline is not really a special move, but just the way that he performed it made it look like, oh my god, he just ripped that dude's head off. He's not getting up.
Right. And I've heard a lot of, you know, you hear a lot, you've heard a lot of comparisons over the years, especially since he has the name Brody. You hear a lot of the comparisons of him to Bruiser Brody.
Oh, yeah.
Now, he didn't take the name Brody Lee because of Bruiser Brody. He took it, I believe it was from Jason Lee's character, or it was kind of a tribute to Jason Lee in the movie Mallrats.
Ah, yeah, yeah. Good movie.
So, but he's always been, I've always heard him compared to Bruiser Brody, just like the style that he works. And, you know, Brody was always, you know, always had the big boot and all that. But to me, Brody Lee could not only was he a good brawler, but he could wrestle. And he proved that.
Yes, he did.
Several different. One of the matches that I most fondly remember him for was, I can't remember what pay-per-view it was in 2014, but it was him and Rowan, 2 out of 3 falls with the Usos.
The SummerSlam, wasn't it?
I think there was a month before, was it? Was it Money in the Bank or Money in the Bank or Battleground?
I have no idea, but I know the match you're talking about. That was awesome.
Any of you guys remember that match?
Oh,
not
no, not really.
Vaguely. Yeah, vaguely.
Not really.
Vaguely. Yeah, I remember that. Glennis? Yes. I remember the match, though. Yes. I don't know what match you're talking about.
All right. Yeah, that was, I think it was Battleground 2014, and it opened the show, and I believe that was actually like the best match on the, like the show went downhill from there.
Yeah.
Oh yeah, it was the best match in the card that night.
Oh yeah, it was hot garbage.
The show was not the match.
No, the match was good.
The match saved the show.
It was just doo doo butter.
It's garbage.
But
yeah,
Brody and Rowan always had good chemistry with the Usos, though.
Yeah, especially for big guys working with smaller guys.
Yeah,
I always enjoyed those two teams together. I mean, I remember. Do you guys think that that Brody's a really good promo? Or what would you say about his voice? Because when he went to AEW, that's when I really started like hearing him talk. Because I mean, WWE didn't really have too many spots to kind of cut promos. And even though I'm not I wasn't a Dark Order fan, but his mic skills kind of made it like legitimate to me, and it started bringing me on board for the storyline. What are you guys' thoughts on his promo?
I thought he was really good on the mic in AEW. You know, I've seen some of it. He was really good on the mic, and he always did. And this is not something I think a lot of guys do, is that he always kept it real to what he was doing. Like, he cut a promo. He was in Chikara going for the Young Lions Cup, and he cut a promo talking about how he was more like a bear than a lion. And it was a great promo, but it fit his gimmick because it was like just, like a guy like talking about how he's going to kick your ass. And then, you switch to where he's kind of doing the more serious kind of menacing boss thing with the Dark Order. It just worked. And yeah, he could cut a hell of a promo.
Right. Yeah, man. I mean, he was a very, very intelligent dude. Like, I remember listening to him on Jericho's podcast and why he left WWE, and it kind of resonated with me because Vince didn't really treat him right. Don't get me wrong, I think he did good. I was happy that he made it to WWE. I go, oh my god, local guy actually made it big. good for him. I was happy. But I felt like they could have done a lot more with him with the skills he has as far as in-ring and on the mic. And I felt like when he got to AEW, he finally was able to do that. He had more freedom to do what he wanted to do, you know. And it's unfortunate. You know, I thought we were going to see a lot more of that combination from him. So I liked the direction he was going in when it came to AEW.
Right. And here's the thing. I think in 2017, I do believe they were thinking about doing something with him because that was around the time where it was like it was going to be Bray versus Randy at WrestleMania.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of people were just like, you know, well, it's going to suck. So they started pushing Harper, I think. And, you know, then the thought was, okay, well, it's going to be a triple threat at WrestleMania. And so they could make the match, you know, passable. But
yeah.
Then after a few weeks, they lost interest in him, which sucked because he was really gaining momentum.
Yep.
And then, like, and then I think he was on TV for like 6 months.
Yeah.
Which was stupid.
And then that's when they brought him back
with
the Blood Brothers,
right?
Right.
I mean, I never really understood it. It's like, okay, well, why the fuck are you taking him off TV when he has all this
right.
momentum? And
yeah.
that's where I think it went wrong because WWE. And this is a problem with a lot of the independent guys that they bring in that have had success in other places. And Clint, Eric and I were actually talking about this earlier on when we did the Hard Hit show. Is that, like, you know, a lot of these independent guys that come in, you know, it's the booking that screws them.
Yeah.
And I think it's just because also, too, they don't know, or the people that are booking them now, like WWE's creative team, they're just like, okay, well, this worked for them in that stage, but we don't think it's going to work there. We don't think it's going to work here, so therefore we're not even going to try it.
Yeah.
Well, how would you know if it's going to work or not? If you
right.
have to, and if it fails, then you stop, and then you try something else. But just because you think it's not going to work, that doesn't mean you don't try it. It means you, well, because these WWE writers don't know shit. They know how to put their tongues in Vince McMahon's asshole, and that's it.
Pretty much.
They can't think for themselves. If Vince says, no, it's not going to work without trying it, then there's they don't have the balls to say, Vince, you're stupid. I mean,
yeah. Vince is starting to be.
I say that now because he's 75 years old and should be putting the old folks home.
That's kind of how every company is ordered, though.
Yeah. But Tony Khan, at least, like, Tony Khan at least still listens, I think.
Oh, yeah. He gives a lot of creative control to his superstars, and you can see by just watching the product itself, there's a reason why he's beating WWE in ratings, because he lets the wrestlers kind of run the show. You know, he doesn't, like, dictate every single movement like Vince does, you know, and he listens to the feedback, and he, you know, and it really does show. Like, I think AEW and all is a superior product now over WWE. I stopped kind of watching it because of the hokey storylines and the stupid gimmicks that they've been coming up with lately.
Yeah, I mean, I think there's a lot of cons that come with that too, to be honest, that AEW has.
Right.
I mean, I know they got a lot of pros, but there's a shit ton of cons.
Well, they have at least a couple of cons, you know, Tony and his father.
Yeah.
I don't think anybody got it.
Yeah, I got it.
But now we got it. But, like, Eric got it, too.
Oh, what are you saying?
All right. But, like, I kind of want to dig in. I don't want to spend a lot of time on this because this is, like, part of the controversy.
Yeah.
But there was an article by Bruce Mitchell of, well, formerly of the Pro Wrestling Torch. As of 2 hours ago, he was fired. Basically, he calls into question the lung issue because they say it was non-COVID related, but, you know, nowadays, anybody gets any type of sickness, you know, it has to be COVID related. And I'm not downplaying COVID whatsoever because I know people that have had it. I know people that have tested positive. Okay.
Right.
So I'm not going to downplay it, but just because like somebody is sick, that doesn't necessarily mean it's COVID related. But Bruce Mitchell called in the question, is like, okay, well, why did they keep the secret? Because there was a lot of controversy, you know, earlier on when the pandemic first started and, you know, WWE refusing to shut down. And even like AEW still running shows. AEW had to run shows in a gym. And they had to tape everything 6 weeks ahead of time, you know, before they, you know, were basically told, hey, you have to be, you know, you have to stop because everything down. WWE refused to shut down. When they told Vince McMahon, you guys can't close anymore, he said, no, fuck you. And he paid off the board of governors. But like,
yeah, well, this Bruce Mitchell guy, isn't he the same guy who basically screwed over Smoky Mountain?
It sounds familiar.
Right? Didn't he report they were closing like 5 months before they were closing and got him kicked off TV?
Oh, really? You did?
It was him. That's or so Wade crying. Keller. I don't know which guy.
It might have been Keller because Cornette never brings up Bruce Mitchell. He always talks about how he wants to kill Wade Keller.
Either way, yeah, douchebag. Bruce Mitchell, douchebag.
Well,
I got to tell you this. I had to look the guy up because I couldn't remember who he was. And apparently he shares a name with the fat guy on Swamp People on the History Channel.
Okay. Oh, wow.
You guys got to Google it because it's hard to explain what the guy looks like, but it's hysterical.
Okay.
Bruce Mitchell, and then a lot of people, like Chris Hero, actually called out Bruce Mitchell for what Bruce Mitchell said. You know, there for you the know. Article and all that. Because, you know, now you're calling in the court. All right, so now you're basically, you're saying that the guy's wife is alive. Right?
Yeah. Among other issues with the whole, there's enough bullshit going around about COVID already.
I mean, yeah, I mean, who knows what's really going on? 2020 can't really shock me anymore, I don't think. But it really does seem like he was just trying to get clicks because of the situation that's going on. He just seems like a guy that was trying to get views and clicks and stirring up the shit for no reason. At least from my perspective. I haven't read much into it. But.
Yeah, I mean, I did read. Okay, because I saw it. I saw something on Facebook. Somebody posted a video, and the hashtag was "fuck Bruce Mitchell."
I'm thinking,
okay, well, fuck. I looked it up, and then Wade Keller posted something, and it's just like, look, we took the article down, and then Bruce Mitchell commented and said, look, I understand, but guess what? I'm still standing by what I wrote, which is what a journalist is supposed to do. Not a good journalist. The good journalist is also supposed to admit when he's wrong. He doesn't think.
Exactly.
He was trying to get to the bottom of something. But Wade Keller basically said, you know what? I don't want to call any more attention to this. I enough is enough. Bruce, you know, goodbye. You're out. So as of 2 hours ago, like I said, he fired him. After 30 years, this guy wrote one article basically calling another guy, calling a guy's wife a liar.
The speculation just kind of seemed like, like I said, he's just trying to benefit off of a guy's death, which, I mean, is a pretty shitty morally thing to do. I know journalists aren't always the most stand-up people, but it seems very disrespectful, and honestly, he kind of deserves it.
It's no different.
Gentlemen.
Grace. Basically, when the Ultimate Warrior died, and Nancy Grace basically came on and started the rumor that his death had to do with steroids.
Oh, I didn't say it was, and I haven't said that it hasn't been going on forever, because it has. That's
okay, I'm about to say something very strange.
All right, go
ahead. I can't believe I'm about to say this, but like, if prior to this, I would have trusted Bruce Mitchell before I trusted Nancy Grace. Now I don't trust either of them, so.
Right, and that's the thing, and I'm not necessarily trying to take away from, you know, the truth that we're trying to hit. I just felt like that needed to be, you know, brought up. Because it is new. Now, again, the issue has been, as far as Bruce Mitchell goes, it's not really resolved. I mean, he's out of a job.
Probably for the best.
But
getting
back to his ring work, another match that he had that he, I don't think a lot of people will forget, although, again, it was from a forgettable pay-per-view, was the TLC in 2014, the ladder match between him and Dolph.
Yeah, that was
what a match.
That was a good one.
And that was during one of Dolph's start-stop pushes.
Yeah. Oh, talk about, like, maybe the most two guys who, you know, such underrated, well, not even underrated, just underused talent. I mean, it's just like, thinking back on the feud was great because, I mean, it was in that whole kind of authority weirdo thing they were doing, you know, that's how it kind of all started. And then just, you know, they just worked. I mean, Dolph will bump around like a madman. So he makes Brody Lee's stuff look even better. And Brody looked like he looked pretty intimidating, like throwing Dolph Ziggler's carcass at Triple H's feet, basically. And it worked because he had, he kind of was classic wrestling. He had Dolph Ziggler, by normal standards, is not a small human being. He had a smaller baby face and a big monster heel. And, you know, baby face could sell like a madman. So it worked. It just worked. It was classic wrestling. That's all they need to do.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
Classic storytelling.
Yeah, and also, too, that was another one of those pay-per-views where, you know, Harper, known as Luke Harper at the time, he opened the show, and him and Dolph kind of stole the show because it was another one of those pay-per-views that's kind of forgettable. Yeah. They had a couple of decent things on there, but when you have Big Show and Eric Rowan in a Steel Stairs match... you don't remember. That's how good it was.
Doo-doo butter.
But, again, Harper, I think Brody could work with anybody.
Yeah, and...
Yes, he can.
Especially in that tag team, and I'm not taking anything against Rowan or taking anything away from Rowan, but you knew who the guy was. Even just watching their matches, you know who the workhorse was. You know, and if you had to look at that team and be like, this guy's going to make it, I mean, to me, it's obvious. It was always Luke Harper. He was always what made the matches great. I mean, Rowan was a very decent powerhouse, and I don't hate him, but, I mean, Harper was on the next level, like, the whole time, pretty much.
I mean, yeah, he was definitely the brains behind that.
Yeah. And I liked Eric Rowan, too. I mean, I like both guys.
Yeah, but I mean, you know which one.
Yeah, Luke was some – listen, gentlemen, something's come up. I want to thank you for – it's nothing serious or anything, but I want to thank you for giving me the chance to share memories of a man I'm sad I never met, but his memories will live on, man. I mean, that's the one good thing about technology we got now is, I mean, time we want, we can always look back. It's unfortunately he can't do that for his family, but hopefully people in wrestling will step up and, you know, if that doesn't happen, hopefully Tony Khan will step up and open his pockets and help out the family, so... Thank you, gentlemen, so much.
I think a lot of them will, though.
What?
I think a lot of them will step up and help out, though. Or at least from what I've read, you know, all the memories that people have shared of him, somebody's going to step up and help her.
Yeah, I saw that CM Punk and Mick Foley already stepped up and said any merchandise they sell, all the money's going to the family. And I have a lot of respect for that, you know.
Absolutely.
So that's why.
So I gotta go, gentlemen.
All right.
Thank
all
you
right.
for the invite. And
all right, no problem.
Whenever
we'll talk to you
back.
Soon. Yeah, we'll talk to you soon.
Always
it was
love
nice
you guys.
Talking
yes, so much. Yep, you guys have a good one.
All right, you too,
bye-bye.
Guys.
You too.
Bye.
Bye.
Yeah,
well, that's
I mean,
more on air time. But yeah, so, like, also, to you know, getting back to the point of, like, him being kind of like the workhorse, you know, especially of that team. Remember when, like, him and Strowman were kind of teaming together? Like, when Strowman kind of replaced Rowan in the Wyatt family? That's when Strowman
yeah.
was pretty
yeah.
mean. He couldn't work for shit.
Oh, no, he couldn't. He was terrible at first.
What was it? Was it TLC 2015? I'm not just asking you. It was the Wyatt family in the tables match against the Dudleys. Or not just the Dudleys, but the whole, like, ECW crew or whatever.
Sounds familiar. I don't quite remember.
I don't remember
that. It was the TLC pay-per-view in... Because that was in Boston, and I remember it being in Boston because during the Roman Sheamus match, everybody just kept chanting, "We want Cena."
Until you were in Boston, you don't get that much elsewhere.
Well, yeah.
That's
so,
how you know the match sucked.
Yeah. But they had a tables match there, and the tables match was okay, but then they really shined the next night on Raw when it was Team ECW versus the Wyatt family and that Philadelphia street fight, which was the same, and that was actually a pretty decent episode of Raw. The same night that Roman won the WWE title, and the city of Philadelphia finally forgave him for winning the Royal Rumble earlier in the year.
Oh yeah,
mainly because Eric wasn't in the crowd that night.
Hey,
yeah, you're right. It was Eric's fault.
I mean, I do blame him.
Not the...
Well, Clinton was there. I liked Clinton better at the time.
I was also at that Royal Rumble too, though.
I know, but I'm just. I was trying to pick up for you. Were you at that Raw though when Roman won the title?
No, I wasn't.
But you remember what I'm talking about, though, right?
Oh, I don't even know what you're talking about, yeah.
And that Extreme Rules match, the 8-man tag, where I think Harper's actually the one that got the win.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, that was probably like one of the best matches you have on the card.
Yeah, because they were allowed to, you know, they were allowed to do whatever... They were basically allowed to do whatever they wanted.
Huh.
And this, you know, it was shortly after Bray and Harper had the job to Undertaker and Kane at Survivor Series.
Yep, I remember that.
But, all right, Stevie, I'm going to ask you, because we really haven't, I haven't had much of a chance to throw it to you, and I'll blame Kenny. But, like, what do you think was Brody or Luke Harper's best match?
I would probably say the ladder match with Dolph Ziggler. That'd be my honest opinion.
Yeah. Well, because it was a really good match, and again, Harper or Brody or whatever you want to call him, he could work with anybody.
Yeah, he was a good in-ring worker.
Yeah. I mean, he could work with Brandon, for Christ's sake.
yeah, somehow he managed.
I really liked his match with Moxley when they beat the hell out of each other.
At the
on AEW?
Yeah, Double or Nothing.
Yeah, that was a really good match.
I remember kind of complaining beforahand because Brody Lee had kind of just came in. So,
and he was already getting it.
Yeah, so I thought it was like too early. Like, and to me, that was a sign that he wasn't going to win. So I didn't have much interest, but then I watched it and it was fucking awesome. And they really beat the hell out of each other too.
And that was the debut of the Bulldog Choke, right?
Yeah. And that's the two most believable guys. If someone tells me wrestling's fake, I'll just like show them that match and watch those two behemoths punch the hell out of each other. Mm-hmm. And, you know, keep telling me it's fake.
And what was funny is another one of those guys go ahead, Brandon.
Yeah, it's exactly what you said. That match with Lee and Moxley, I knew that Lee was going to lose because they were pushing Moxley hard. But that match, it was so good. And, you know, at least they didn't, like, make Lee look like, you know, a pushover. You know, he beat the hell out of him. It was a believable, legit match. And even though I knew, I had a feeling that he was going to lose, I still had, like, another feeling of, oh, shit, maybe he'll actually win. Oh, wow. It, like, had me on the edge of my seat almost.
Yeah.
Well, you can tell, too, because, again, the way Brody Lee lost, it was because of that bulldog choke. And when you have somebody pass out to a submission move and not tap out, that's how you know that, you know, they're trying to build this guy. It's kind of like an unstoppable monster to where, like, you have to legitimately choke his ass out in order. And that bulldog choke, again, that was, like, the first time Moxley had ever done the thing. And, you know, he's gotten the thing over, which is actually, like, it's a cool-looking move because it kind of just looks like a side headlock. But
yeah, it does.
The way he's got him positioned, it's just like, holy shit, he's actually choking the guy.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
But, you know, there was another match that Zoom had back in WWE. It was Extreme Rules 2015. It was Falls Count Anywhere. And they actually, like, they started the match and they were wrestling. And then all of a sudden they both jumped in a car and started taking off in downtown Chicago. Yeah, like Harper was trying to drive away in this SUV. Moxley, or Ambrose at the time, jumps through the window, not on the passenger side, on the driver's side. Basically jumps in the Harper's lap as he's trying to drive the car. And they both take off, like I said, to downtown Chicago. And then I remember, like, there was a backstage segment with Triple H, where Triple H is like, somebody please find those two and get them back here so we can have the rest of this match. Just make sure that they don't end up in jail in Chicago. Because, like, the way those two personalities, now, again, they were kind of tame in WWE, But like the way those two personalities were, and their, you know, histories is, you know, backyard, you know, in that whole backyard wrestling type deal, you know, and CZW and all that. Like, you would expect those.
I was
going to
say that.
Yeah. Except for you would probably expect them to probably drive off a bridge. I'm sure.
Yeah.
Did you see?
Yeah, they saw him.
About him.
I did read it. Yes.
He was calling him like his Terry Gordy and his best friend and all that. And
yeah.
That was actually sad.
It was sad. I mean, and here's the thing: when you lose, when you're close with somebody, you know, like Bray Wyatt was with Harper, with Brody. And again, it was perfect that he called him like the Terry Gordy to his Michael Hayes.
I like that comment that he posted about we were supposed to grow old and, you know, job out into random gymnasiums. That was funny when Bray posted that.
Yeah, it was.
Yeah, and like, but when you lose somebody that you're that close with, it you know, it screws with you.
Oh yeah.
It screws with your head. And Brody, but I don't think there was anybody that really didn't like Brody.
No, everybody loved that guy.
I saw nothing but positive.
Yeah. I mean, even last night on Talking Smack, when Xavier Woods was talking about it. Now, again, they referred to him by his real name.
Yeah.
Okay.
Okay.
And Xavier Woods was talking about how good of a man he was and how good of a father he was. And, you know, then Kofi talked about it. Because, you know, they had their battles with them, too. And mm-hmm. I mean, Xavier had a lot more battles with him in FCW and in NXT.
Yeah.
But another thing I want to bring up here, and it's another, not necessarily a controversial thing, but Curt Hawkins or Brian Myers, whatever the fuck he was called, posted on Twitter or tweeted, he's just like, no 10 bell salute, no video packages. They should have done more. I do kind of see that, but he wasn't on the WWE roster.
Well, they've done it to so many legends and stuff too. Like I felt that way about a couple passings. Okay. Like it's the first time they've just done that.
Right.
To me, I think the only reason why they did not do that is because he's not on the roster no more. I figure if it was still on the roster, they would have done something about it. The video package, the whole nine yards. But with Pat Patterson or anybody else, all the legends who died, you do this stuff. That's because they're still under contract. They're still working under the business. Brody's case, he's not under contract anymore.
Yeah, and they've even done that to a few legends that were always under contract, too. They've done, like, just that little, like, in memory of before to other people.
George the Animal Steel, I think, being one that I remember the most because George never went anywhere else besides with them.
Yeah.
I kind of think it had more to do. Now, it was reported that they did film, like, all the pictures to him. That are probably going to be aired at some point.
On the network.
Yeah. I also think that maybe they felt like if they did something like that, AEW would be like, wait a minute, he's under contract with us. They probably figured that AEW would do something.
My thinking is, I think
he was under
they wanted
AEW,
AEW do something first.
That shouldn't matter, though.
Yeah. Go ahead, Eric.
I was thinking maybe they knew that AEW was going to do something, and maybe the wife requested, hey, let AEW do first, and then maybe Friday night they'll do something.
I mean, they might. I mean, technically he has always been a SmackDown guy. before when they did the draft and all that shit.
And since they're getting sick for it, now maybe they'll do something on SmackDown now. After
I AEW. Don't know if I would call. I don't know if I would take a lot of merit though on what Curt Hawkins has to say.
Well, did you see
Zack Ryder?
Right? I've seen a lot of fans.
Did you see Kevin Nash talking shit too?
No, what happened? They posted. He just took a little jab, but they posted. They said learn a little about Brody, the history, Luke Harper and stuff like that. Or like click on here to learn a little about him. And then Kevin commented. He said very little. Well, he's off at Legends Night Monday night.
Yeah.
Boo.
Which it's well, I mean, first of all, just a little side note about that. It's really not much of a Legends Night when you're one of your main advertisements is Tori Wilson.
Geez. Wow.
But I mean, I don't know if a lot of people are just going to be like, you know, like a lot of people are going to take what Curt Hawkins says seriously. I mean, Kevin Nash, maybe. But I do think it's just more, you know, WWE wanted AEW to kind of have, you know, because he was under an AEW contract. So maybe they're just like, all right, we'll let them do it. And then maybe they'll run something on that. They'll run like a tribute or something on NXT.
Yeah, that's when he started, so, in WWE, so.
I mean, I wouldn't criticize WWE too much. I mean, a lot of the WWE superstars did pay tribute to the guy. And again, like I said earlier, Randy Orton, a guy who basically has pissed off everybody he could, you know, over his 20-year career, if not pissing them off and pooping in their handbags, at least if they want. I mean, he even took the time to say, look, I want to tell you about my friend Luke. And also because his wife is friends with Harper's wife.
I read a story earlier today about it. It's something Rowan shared about him. And it's just to kind of say a little bit about how he was as a guy and how much he cared about his family. He would tell everybody after the shows and stuff, when they would have their 1-2-day breaks, he would say goodbye forever. You know why he did that? He wasn't actually trying to, like, say goodbye. Like, he knew he was going to see them again, but he didn't, in his head, he wanted it to feel like he was spending forever with his wife and kids before he came back.
Right.
So that's why he would say goodbye forever. That was just like one of his little things. So he didn't feel like he was just gone for a day with his family.
Oh, I understand now.
Yeah. I mean, well, I mean, he's a devoted family man.
Yeah. I mean, that's definitely what I've learned from most of this is seeing all the videos. And even I went back and watched his thing on network and it really is touching. Definitely check that out if you haven't seen it.
Yeah, definitely.
They did on him.
Oh, okay. And again, you know, he's a devoted family man and everybody's made sure to bring that up, in all the tributes they did for him and his wife now how old the kids were, how old, little Brody was eight or is eight. And how old's his youngest? I'm not just asking
that. I'm not sure.
You got to be, what, 3 or 4, maybe?
Yeah, really young.
All right. I should have Googled it before the show. But, like, you know, he's leaving behind two little kids, but you know that those little kids are going to know who their dad is. Because I have a feeling that a lot of these wrestlers, especially the ones that were, like, really close with them, are going to be like, you know, let me tell you about your dad.
Well, I would hope so. I feel like a lot of people put that on for face. I'm sure he's got a lot of close friends and stuff, but I hope they actually take care of the family like everyone's talking about.
Well, he was actually, you know, he's not the, I mean, he's probably the most famous wrestler from, you know, our area. Well, yeah, I mean, him and Lex, obviously. Brandon would have stayed in the business. if Kenny wouldn't have trusted the money from Battle at the Beach to Hellcat, then Kenny would still be in the business.
Oh, Hellcat's a dick.
Oh, man, we might have to do an episode on this.
Oh, yeah. God. I trained with Hellcat.
He's an asshole?
Yeah, he is. He can. He's a steroided up asshole.
Well, apparently, and this is a little bit off topic, and I can tell this story because he's not here to defend himself. when Kenny was part of that Victory One Wrestling, and he was booking, they did this Battle at the Beach event, and Hellcat was helping him promote everything. Well, Hellcat took off with the majority of the money.
Yeah, that's shitty.
So, Kenny tells the story better and longer than I do.
I'm sure.
But, but back to my original point, like, you know, Brody's from our area, obviously, Luger. I don't know if anybody really knows this guy or not, but Dalton Castle, who was a Ring of Honor world champion, also who happened to be kind of a childhood friend of Brody's.
Yeah. I also saw the Blade or whatever talking about him, too, on Instagram.
Yeah,
because he's from my hometown, too.
Yeah, I know him, too. He's a very good guy. I was so happy to see him debut on AEW. Because I saw him on the Butcher and the Blade. I saw him on the ESW show right before they debuted, and it was fucking amazing.
Yeah, they're sweet. They're a cool team.
Yeah.
And I also, Colin Delaney. But, Colin Delaney... Dalton Castle, Brody Lee, they were all Brody's older. Like a few years, but, they all knew each other.
Yeah.
I mean, Brody, obviously, he was the one that, made it to the big time.
Yeah.
But, they were all very close. Dalton Castle even said it one time, he goes, even though Brody works, Harper, as he called him at the time of the interview, Harper works for WWE. I work for Ring of Honor, but yet we're still close because we both still live in the same area. Because they grew up Castle said he grew up not that far from him.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, wow.
So and it's just amazing, how many people, and you can almost say that for Philadelphia, too, because of, the ECW guys. So, Eric and Clint can kind of say, a lot of the ECW guys, they grew up around here. But, it's amazing how many guys, grew up in the area that, you and I and Brandon and Stevie and Kenny all, grew up in.
Yeah.
I mean, we didn't know. I mean, Brandon knew, obviously, he knew Blade and he knew Brody.
Yeah.
Brandon, did you ever meet Dalton Castle, too?
I was going to ask that.
I don't think I met Dalton Castle. That name doesn't really sound too familiar, but
what the hell? I think one of the first name he went by when he was in Chikara was Ashley Remington.
It rings a bell, but I never really got to meet the guy personally, but. Yeah, so no, I don't really know much about him, but no, that's cool.
Yeah. I mean, you're a pig. the thing about Harper too is that he was very proud with where he, you know, with where he grew up. Okay.
Yep.
You know, in the Rochester area. I mean, he was built from Rochester. He was built from Buffalo. He was a. I mean, before he got into wrestling, he was a lacrosse player.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Wow.
And he was also a hockey player.
I could see that.
Yeah.
And he's a huge fan. You know, he was a huge fan of the Toronto Blue Jay, or not Toronto Blue Jay, of the Toronto Maple Leafs, and he was a huge fan of the Washington football team.
Ah, okay.
Which we won't hold that against them. Happen to be a fan of the same football team, or at least I'm not going to hold that against them. Yeah. No. another one of the things I kind of wanted to talk about, you know, we talked about, you know, his kind of the comparisons to Bruiser Brody, you know, the discus clothesline, which I swear, like when he would throw that clothesline every time JBL was calling a match.
Yeah.
Like you can almost hear JBL orgasm on it.
Oh my God, look at the clothesline.
Yeah, it's just like, oh my God, that clothesline was on. You know, he almost throws a better clothesline than me.
He did.
Yeah, well, he did. Yeah, exactly.
And his was more unique. Harper's was more unique because he would do the discus move.
Yeah.
And one of the things, and Eric, I'll bring you in on this because I know you saw the match. We didn't, and I can't remember why. But when he beat Cody for the TNT title on Dynamite in less than 3 minutes.
That was awesome.
Yeah, that was brutal. I mean, Cody sold it well, obviously. And when he won, it was great.
Right, because they put him over huge. Now, again, the ratings,
exactly.
And we know why, but Clint, do you remember, did you see when he beat Cody for the title?
No, I did not see him. I saw the highlights of the match, but I didn't see the whole, like, match in general, so.
But it was one of those things that, like, you knew how hard they were going to push this guy because of what he basically did to, you know, the Golden Boy.
The Dark Golden.
Oh, yeah. And I'm not a big fan of Cody Rhodes whatsoever. But the fact that they let their top Golden Boy get squashed in a match tells you how much they were trying to get behind Brody, you know? And it was just great seeing Cody get his ass whooped and seeing Brody get, you know, get the respect he deserves on national television.
And I mean, he dropped, obviously, I'd say, I mean, I'm cool with Darby being the champion right now. Obviously, he dropped the belt probably too quick. Back
yeah.
to Cody, but I don't think he had a choice. But the
story was sick or not.
I'm not sure if that's why he dropped it back immediately. I haven't heard anything.
I don't see there really being any other reason but that. I mean, the storyline itself,
that's
seemed,
yeah.
especially with the dog collar thing. Yeah, I enjoyed that match a lot too, even though Cody went over. I thought Brody really did a good job as a heel.
Knowing kind of what we know now, or at least assuming that that's the reason why he dropped the belt. I mean, I don't think Brody should have. I don't think Brody should have lost, obviously.
But I mean, the storyline was still good.
Me neither.
Yeah, it seemed like the storyline was going to continue because Brody, I thought, shot a promo right after that match. And, I mean, if it wasn't for, you know, the tragic circumstances, I think that storyline would have continued, and it would have been a great storyline. I really enjoyed it.
Yeah.
As much as I don't like Cody Rhodes, I did like the feud between them. It was great storytelling.
Yeah, and if they were going to do it, they probably would have had Cody get the belt back at the pay-per-view instead.
Right, instead of having a Darby go, unless Brody was originally, unless Brody was supposed to work with Darby, which I don't really see that.
Would have been fantastic.
Involved in that storyline with Taz and his guys. None of it really made any sense. Knowing what we know now.
Yeah, it's real life.
Yeah. I really don't think anybody really had a choice. Yeah.
Right.
And again, you know, AEW obviously, according to reports, AEW knew since like November.
Yeah.
What was going on. But Amanda Bates, I guess, had said to them, please don't say anything to anybody. We want this kept quiet because I really don't want him bombarded with questions and all that.
Yeah.
Which you can't blame her.
You can't blame her. It's privacy.
That's personal stuff. Nobody needs to know about that.
Yeah.
That's her business.
Right.
Exactly.
And then, I guess everybody knew something was going on because I guess after the Holiday Bash tapings last week, they brought Brody's son into the ring and he beat, you know, quote unquote, because it's not an official title change, obviously, but he beat Kenny Omega for the AEW World title.
Oh, that's awesome. I like that.
And they said they did it so Brody can see, even though it's unofficial, obviously, because the kid's only 8.
Right.
So Brody see his son compete in a wrestling match.
That's awesome.
And
I like that.
And it just shows how much that company does care.
Yeah.
I'm glad Kenny's not a huge fan of AEW. He has said that before. So, like, I'm kind of glad I waited till after he was off the air so I could say this. That company has proven that they do care about their people.
Yeah.
What
does Cody call it? The Ellis Island for wrestlers?
Yeah. And Tony Khan, I will give Tony Khan credit for the fact that he does know how to take care of his guys. I do think that, you know, as far as the football team goes, he needs to take care of them by taking them out back with a shotgun.
Yeah.
The coach.
Jaguars suck.
Oh, they're fucking off. If Doug Marrone keeps his job next week, there's something wrong.
There's no way he's keeping that.
He should have been fired 3 years ago. But anyway,
right?
Well, yeah, like the company does obviously care, and I think that's when the light bulb kind of went on for people. It's just like, because once it was reported, or you know, once the his reported, because again, not a lot of people in the like. I think Tony Khan knew what was going on.
Yeah.
Cody may have known. The Bucks knew, and Kenny knew.
Yeah.
Other than that, nobody else. I don't even think members of the Dark Order knew. But now my question is, like, what happens to them?
Well, that's the thing about tomorrow, because they're booking it basically to where it's not supposed to make sense, like, storyline-wise.
Right.
Because you got, like,
no.
or whatever his name is, tagging with Cody. Even though the Dark Order was feuding with Cody. And but it's all because it's like John's favorite guys, right?
Yeah.
He's like buddies and stuff. And that's fine. You know, I think real life can take precedence sometimes over pro wrestling shenanigans. I mean, I understand staying true to the story, but I think it's a nice thing to do for him.
Right, and like Hangman Silver and Reynolds again, which
that's kind of already becoming a storyline.
Yeah, and Silver and Reynolds, you talk about two guys that were like nobodies before AEW, and like at the start of AEW, but then they joined the Dark Order, and they're still a couple of putzes. But then Brody comes in. It's like John Silver is almost like a household name.
Wouldn't say household.
Well, almost. I mean, this is a guy that was supposed to have a match on the fucking pre-show of Full Gear, but everybody likes him so much. It, like him and Orange Cassidy is not necessarily like a main event, you know, a main card level match.
Yeah.
And Tony Khan's just like, you know what? People actually do like this motherfucker. Let's put him on the main show.
Yeah.
So. It's just, you know, he
has his people.
Yeah.
He listens to his audience rather than Vince McMahon going, oh, this is good shit. Yeah.
No, Tony Khan knows that. And that's why I can kind of see AEW being around for a long time. It's because they're actually listening to people.
Yeah. That can get dangerous.
I hope they are.
Opinions, but
no, I mean, if he starts listening to us, he's screwed.
Oh, yeah.
Especially if Pernicus gets
maybe one
support.
Day we'll get him on an interview.
Well, we just ruined that.
They should pick up Jeff Hardy and job him out.
Hey, whoa, hang on. Let's pump the brakes a little bit here.
Yeah, you're right. AEW's already got the good Hardy.
No, they got the worst Hardy. Okay. Nobody likes that Hardy.
I'm a big Matt Hardy fan.
but, I mean, Brody was just – Brody is definitely going to be remembered for being one of those guys that – he's going to be obviously remembered for being a family man because everybody's going to keep talking about that. But like I said earlier, he could work with anybody. Randy Orton, who can't really, you know – you can only get a good match out of him when he feels like it.
Yeah.
And going back to Elimination Chamber 2017, him, Harper and Orton had one of the best matches on the show.
Yeah,
I thought so. And that was the match that, like, everybody thought there was going to be Harper's breakout moment. Then Vince lost interest.
Fuck Vince.
I'd rather not. Although if we, I'm gonna let it go. This is supposed to be a what? You're surprised that I'm not gonna say anything offensive? Huh.
No.
You rolled your eyes at me. Anybody else got anything they want to say about? Brody?
I think he would have had a great 2021 if it wasn't for, obviously, what happened.
Yeah.
I agree. I would agree.
I could see him getting the AEW strap in the next 2 years if he was still there.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, he was one of their stronger heels.
Yeah.
Oh yeah,
I think the Dark Order was going somewhere. At least I think.
Thank God, 2020 only has 2 days left because this year has like people passing.
I think as far as everything, it's pretty much.
As far as everything, especially people passing. I mean, think of what's going on in like the last week. I mean, before Brody passed.
We'll talk about that Thursday.
Like this year, just
dumpster fire of a year.
Like this year has just sucked, and I feel horrible for Brody's wife and kids just to lose their father and husband the day after Christmas.
Yeah, it's just terrible. They're never going to look at Chris the same way again.
It's really sad to see the family men, too. And thinking back to earlier this year with Shad Gaspard and seeing such good fathers take it away from their young kids, that is really hard to see.
Oh, which, by the way, Shad is breaking news. Well, not breaking news. I mean, it was released like 6 hours ago. Shad Gaspard's wife is actually suing the city of L.A.
Wow.
Because I the reason it's like she's suing them because of she felt like something could have been done at the beach or something, even though it was a fucking riptide swallowed them.
Yeah, I've also heard
what the hell she can do, sue the water.
Well, I've heard the lifeguards were less than stellar though, but who knows.
What really sucked about this year was I actually had tickets for that Rochester AEW show. That was when Brody was supposed to make his debut. You know, he was supposed to come out then, and then COVID happened. And obviously, I don't even know if I'm ever going to be able to get to see an AEW show, much less. It sucks so bad. I was looking forward to it because it was in Rochester, and I knew at that point I knew that he signed with AEW. I was like, oh my god, he's gonna debut that night. Fucking COVID.
Yeah, that was like the first week of COVID, right when he came out.
Yeah, because that's when they went to they had to go right to Jacksonville, and because he came out, I think Matt Hardy debuted that night too.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah, he did. It was originally scheduled in March, like the end of March. And that's when they had to reschedule it. And I was like, fuck.
Yep.
Yeah, because like, that's when everything – you knew something was wrong when they started moving stuff. But again, they had to. Obviously, the thing that sucked a lot about this year is the fact – the reluctance – of a lot of like businesses and stuff. Like when everything first started happening and you had restaurants saying, oh no, we're not going to close. We're going to be really clean. And that's when like government started stepping in and being like, no, you fucking close down. Cause we're telling you to close down. And now like even the new restrictions, especially here in Pennsylvania that have happened, when, you know, they closed their indoor dining and all that and saying stores can only be filled to, like, 50% capacity, and yet you still see hundreds of fucking people still shopping in the stores because they don't give a shit.
Yeah.
I mean, that's another – that's an episode for Thursday's Controlled Chaos when we're all – So – anybody else got anything they want to say about Brody?
He will be sorely missed by everybody in the wrestling world, especially. And rest in peace and thoughts and prayers to his family and friends.
Yeah, R.I.P. You lost a legend.
Yeah.
I mean, I feel very grateful and lucky that I actually got to know him a little bit. And to be honest, when I heard Saturday Night Pat, I started to tear up, man. It hit me harder than I expected. And because I really have a lot of respect for the guy and his work ethic and just his craft. And I'm just so happy and grateful that I got to actually meet him and talk to him and work with him. Because he's a great guy, you know, and obviously anybody that's run into that guy has nothing but positive reactions to him. Everybody loves him. There's no way you can meet the guy and not fall in love with him. He's a great human being, great worker, and it's just like what Doug said. He could wrestle with just about anybody and anything, you know. So to him, you know, rest in peace, buddy, and I wish the family thoughts and prayers, and I will definitely be getting some Brody Lee merchandise because I want to, like, help out the family, too.
Yeah. Absolutely. Well, yeah, so definitely your wrestling RIP, Brody, Brody, Luke, you know, whatever you want to call. Well, John, obviously.
John.
But, yeah, so thank you, everybody, for joining us. Brandon, a lot for coming on. Stevie, Clintus.
Yep.
Eric, we appreciate you guys coming on.
You're welcome.
Quick, we will be on the air. Well, at least Eric and I will be on the air. I think Daniel getting ready to have a seizure right now, so I don't know.
Are we going to make that Patreon?
Aren't you?
We'll
talk
about
that. Well, you have no hair.
All right. Thursday, 8 p.m. Eastern time, live on blogtalkradio.com/everythingunscripted. We will be doing a New Year's Eve episode of Controlled Chaos. We will have some people on with us. We will be completely drunk. drunk, we might be completely naked. I don't know.
Completely canceled.
See where the night goes.
So, all right. Thank you, everybody, for joining us. RIP Brody, and we'll see you again next time.
Thanks for having me on.
Bye. Yeah, you're welcome, man. Anytime.